welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Monday, October 16, 2023. The UN Secretary General says the world needs to be mindful of those who need food.
In our world of plenty, it is outrageous that a person dies of hunger every few seconds, while the World Food Programme has been forced to cut its essential aid programs. In 2015, after years of progress, government set the goal of zero hunger by 2030. But 8 years later, the number of people suffering from hunger has increased significantly.
And Amnesty International is calling on the forces in Sudan to protect civilians.
Amnesty International have documented serious violations committed by both the Sudanese and the forces and the rapid support forces throughout the conflict, including war crimes. Civilians, particularly in the capital Khartoum and in Darfur, and mostly in western Darfur, have been subjected to indiscriminate attacks.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has called on the government, private sector, civil society, and academia to work together and prioritize feeding the hungry. This, as the UN says, 780 million people globally are going hungry, and 50 million children are at risk of death from severe hunger. In his World Food Day statement today, the Secretary General called for scaling up investments to increase resilience in agriculture and addressing long-term causes of hunger, such as conflict and climate change.
World Food Day 2023 comes during a global food crisis, with the world moving backwards on ending hunger and malnutrition. Some 780 million people around the world are going hungry. Almost 50 million children are at risk of death from severe wasting. Yet, funding for this year's global humanitarian appeal stands at just 32%. In our world of plenty, it is outrageous that a person dies of hunger every few seconds, while the World Food Programme has been forced to cut its essential aid programs. In 2015, after years of progress, government set the goal of zero hunger by 2030. But 8 years later, the number of people suffering from hunger has increased significantly. This crisis demands action, first and foremost from national governments, which have a responsibility to make sure their people have enough to eat. But many governments lack the resources to do so, and so effective international solidarity is also essential. The long-term causes of the global food crisis include conflicts, climate extremes, inequality, and economic instability. The UN system is addressing these root causes through our support for sustainable, equitable food systems that put people over profits. That means massively scaling up investments in resilient agriculture and aligning them with climate action. It means leveraging science and technology to improve the efficiency and reach of food systems. This year's theme for World Food Day focuses on water, a necessity for nutritious and healthy food. Sustainable management of water for agriculture and food production is essential to end hunger, achieve the SDGs, and preserve water for future generations. Zero hunger is achievable. This World Food Day, I call on governments, the private sector, civil society, and academia to work together to prioritize feeding the hungry, to bring ending this crisis to the top of the global agenda, and to invest in long-term solutions that provide everyone with enough to eat.
That was UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres addressing the world on the World Food Day. The United Nations World Food Programme says record levels of hunger in Sudan have been confirmed. WFP focuses that hunger would rise to engulf more than 19 million people in the coming months. WFP says now, 6 months since the conflict in Sudan erupted in mid-April, that grim prediction has proved to be a harsh reality. The latest Integrated Food Security Phase classification analysis shows that the conflict has pushed over 20 million people into severe acute hunger. That is around 42% of Sudan's population. Of that figure, 6.3 million people are experiencing IPC4 or emergency levels of hunger. That is one step away from famine. The armed conflict in Sudan between the Rapid Support Forces and the Sudan Armed Forces entered its sixth month today. According to the United Nations, the ongoing fighting has claimed the lives of at least 5,000 civilians and forced 6 million people to flee their homes. Abdullahi Hassan, a researcher for Sudan and Somalia at the Amnesty International, sheds lights on one of the underlying factors behind Sudan's current violence, the lack of accountability for past crimes.
Conflict that erupted in Sudan in April this year, which now is 6 months old, has had a devastating impact on civilians in Sudan. Both the Sudanese armed forces and the rapid support forces have caused immense human suffering in the country. Amnesty International have documented serious violations committed by both the Sudanese armed forces and the rapid support forces throughout the conflict, including war crimes. Civilians, particularly in the capital Khartoum and in Darfur, and mostly in western Darfur, have been subjected to indiscriminate attacks, and they have also been subjected to targeted attacks in some of the cases, especially in west Darfur. The rapid support forces and allied Arab militias have carried out targeted attacks against the Masalit community in what Amnesty International documented to be ethnically motivated attack. Many people have been forced to flee their homes, both in the capital Khartoum and in many parts of the country. Amnesty International researchers, including myself, have visited Chad in June, where we have witnessed a very dire situation where many refugees who fled the conflict have been suffering from hunger, from overcrowding, and many of them were wounded and injured by both indiscriminate and targeted attacks. Unfortunately, this situation is still unfolding. The inaction from the international community seems to be emboldening the parties to the conflict.
Yes, I wanted to talk to you about that part, about accountability. Now the reports we have like more than 5,000 civilian deaths and 12,000 injured, 5.7 million people forcibly displaced. In this statement Amnesty International put out, you mentioned justice and accountability being essential to the protection of civilians. Could you explain the current state of accountability for past crimes in Sudan and how it relates to the ongoing violence?
Yeah, over 5,000, according to the UN figures, we have over 5,000 people have been killed, over 12,000 people have been injured, and over 5 million people have been possibly displaced from their countries, from their houses. Some of them are internally displaced within Sudan, and some have fled to neighboring countries, including Chad, Egypt, Central African Republic, South Sudan, and other countries. We believe impunity is one of the root causes of the conflict in Sudan, where two generals who have been committing serious violations of human rights in the past several years, including the conflict in Darfur, which actually this conflict right now is the 20th anniversary of the Darfur conflict, and also the serious violations committed against protesters who are protesting against military takeover in 2021. These generals have had that past, and they think nothing is going to happen to them. And we believe impunity is one of the key drivers of the conflict in Sudan.
I see.
Addressing impunity is really key right
yes,
now.
Yes, I was just getting to that. Amnesty International welcomed the establishment of an international accountability mechanism by the Human Rights Council. Can you tell me about the importance of that, and how do you propose we can address impunity in Sudan?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as I said, impunity in Sudan is one of the things that are fueling the conflict, and we are calling for justice and accountability at the UN Human Rights Council. Amnesty International welcomes the establishment of a fact-finding mission that has the ability to collect evidence of human rights violations, of an international humanitarian law violations, preserve that evidence and identify perpetrators of these serious violations to ensure there is accountability in the future, either in domestic justice mechanisms or in internationally established mechanisms, including the International Criminal Court. So that is why we are welcoming, and we think it's a step towards ensuring there is accountability for all the violations that are being committed by the RSF and SAF at the moment.
That's Abdullahi Hassan, a researcher for Sudan and Somalia at the Amnesty International. He was talking to my colleague Nabil Biagio from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, earlier today. From Nairobi, we'll move back to South Sudan, where authorities in Twitch East and Duke counties in Jong State say three people were killed and scores of others wounded in an intercommunal fighting earlier today. For VOA News, Charlton Doki reports from Juba.
The commissioner of Twitch East County, Jacob Choltor, says lives were lost when some young men from his county and their counterparts from Duke County clashed due to an alleged dispute over fishing grounds.
So we have been lost three people, and three people are wounded in a location called Biatagan. I could not relate it too much because I'm still having communication online with the people.
Peter Latjor, the commissioner of Duke County, says the conflict started after some young men from Twitch East allegedly destroyed fishing nets of their counterparts from Duke County.
The cause root of the incident between Twitch youth and Duke youth who are fishing in a river there, side of Twitch. They came and collect finet of Duke youth who are fishing there, and they came to ban the fishing net.
Commissioner Chol says the situation in the area remains tense, adding that authorities in Twitch East County are appealing for calm in the area. He says he has sent boats to evacuate the wounded to a health facility for treatment.
And the one which had been not killed are already buried. So we are waiting for the response from the government. That these people, the killers, should be brought on book.
VOA could not independently verify the accounts from the authorities in Twitch East and Duke counties. VOA also contacted the Jonglei State Information Minister, Elizabeth Nyadak, and Deputy Governor Jacob Akech for comments on the story, but their phones were switched off. The Jonglei Fisheries Trade Union says conflicts over fishing grounds have become common due to several people involved in commercial fishing along the River Nile and a high demand for fish exports to Uganda and the Democratic Republic of Congo. For VOA News, I'm Charlton Doki in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Chadian opposition leader says it is not safe to go back home. Find out why after this break. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Chad's exiled pro-democracy opposition leader, Success Masara, says increasing threats to civil liberty by Chad's transitional military council make it impossible for him to return from exile on October 18, as announced. He says hundreds of citizens arrested for protesting against the military should be released as an indication of good faith before his return. Muki Edwin Kinzika reports from neighboring Cameroon.
Success Masara, president of Chad's main opposition party, the Transformers, says the political and security situation in his country remains tense and that he plans to delay his trip to Chad until November to avoid any risk to those who were preparing to greet him on his arrival. On Monday, Masra said he has asked Democratic Republic of Congo President Felix Tshisekedi to tell Chad's Transitional Military Council to stop unending human rights violations, including arbitrary arrests, detention, and torture of opponents. Central Africa's regional bloc, the 11-member Economic Community of Central African States, SEAC, appointed Tshisekedi as a facilitator for the political transition in Chad in October 2022, after scores of civilians were killed in protests against Chad's military leader Mohamed Idriss Déby. Announcing his decision to delay, Masra's message was shared on social media, including Facebook and WhatsApp, and broadcast by several media outlets in Chad.
Cette transition boiteuse et bancale se corrige pour être...
He says by violating resolutions of the August 2022 to October 2022 inclusive and sovereign national dialogue, Déby is openly indicating his unwillingness to hand power to civilian rule by November 2024 as decided during the dialogue. Masra says by not releasing several hundred civilians arrested in October 2022 for protesting Chad's military leadership, Déby indicates he has a disregard for human rights. Masra fled Chad to the United States in October of last year through neighboring Cameroon. He fled after the Central African States Security Forces killed 50 people, injured 300, and arrested several hundred during pro-democracy protesters. Chad State TV for several weeks showed videos of thousands of supporters preparing to welcome Masra. The government of the Central African State said Masra was to arrive in Chad on October 18 and take part, along with civil society groups, government ministers, the military, and opposition leaders at commemorative activities marking the first anniversary of the Inclusive and Sovereign National Dialogue on October 20, 2023. The dialogue ended on October 20 last year. The exiled pro-democracy opposition leader said he is calling on civilians to come out in their numbers in Chad's capital, N'Djamena, from October 18 to 20 for what he said will be a true national dialogue. He did not give details on what the dialogue should look like, but said it will indicate how unpopular Chad's military government has become since Mohamed Idriss Déby took over from his father Idriss Déby Idnou on April 21, 2021, and continued impunity and violation of democratic norms. Last week, Déby said he was preparing a return to democratic rule and congratulated the military government elites for providing drinkable water, constructing and equipping hospitals and primary schools, and dismantling many armed groups for a gradual return to peace in Chad. Déby called on all opposition leaders, rights groups, and disgruntled civilians, wherever they are, to have confidence in the peace process and join the military government to build peace for a return to democratic rule. Restoring trust will not be easy. In 2022, rights group Amnesty International reported that an end to violations and transition to democratic governance in Chad will require strong international pressure from Chad's regional and international partners. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Following the attack by Hamas on Israel last week and Israelis' bombardment of the Gaza Strip, protesters around the world have held demonstrations showing support for both Israelis and Palestinians. In Los Angeles, members of the Palestinian and Jewish community took to the streets in response to the unfolding situation in the Middle East. Jeanette Delort reports.
As the war between Israel and the Palestinian militant group Hamas rages on, tens of thousands of people around the globe turned out publicly to show their support. In Los Angeles, the Israel Solidarity March was held Sunday near the Museum of Tolerance, where Karen Avital, who served in the Israeli military, said Israelis and Palestinians will not be able to live together until Hamas is eliminated. Karen Avital is an Israeli-American who served in the Israeli military.
At this point, we cannot. Not until Hamas is gone. We need to wipe them out. They need to be gone. That is supporting terrorism. We do not support terrorism. We do not want to live in fear, and we will never live in fear again, ever.
One attendee, Matt Rosenberg, said his cousin and her husband were killed in the October 7 attack on Israel by Hamas. He described the assault and how family members kept in contact with the couple's 16-year-old son during the assault.
And a grenade exploded the door down. Terrorists rushed in. My cousin jumped on her 16-year-old son and took a bullet, which went through her, into his abdomen. He miraculously survived, lying under his mother's body for a number of hours. For the next 10 to 12 hours, my family was on the phone, on WhatsApp, with their 16-year-old son, coaching him through the situation to make sure that he would not be discovered by the terrorists, who came back to their house three times.
A day earlier, several thousand Palestinian Americans gathered in front of the Israeli consulate to protest the bombardment by Israel of Gaza Strip. Taura, a member of the Palestinian youth movement who asked not to use her last name for safety reasons, spoke of the oppression of Palestinians by Israel.
But they have been denied basic human resources. They have been denied food, water, electricity, fuel, medicine, anything that you can really think of. They've been denied every aspect of human life due to this occupation and military colonization of Palestine.
Iqbal Thabet, who says she emigrated in 2002 from the Palestinian West Bank to the U.S., described growing up there.
They were firing their bullets on me going to my school when I was high school. Many times I went back home because I couldn't get to my school. I witnessed night raids in our village, taking young children, young youth, 14, 15 years old, to jail in front of their parents. And I witnessed my neighbor's house being taken down. I saw that when I was 6 years old, just because some guys hid behind that house for some days, throwing stones on Israeli military jeeps and tanks. Yeah, you're invading their village. What do you expect them to do?
While federal and state law enforcement agencies have been on alert for possible threats, the demonstrations in Los Angeles remained mostly peaceful. Jenny Adulo, VOA News, Los Angeles.
The United States has renewed calls to ensure that innocent civilians fleeing the Israeli-Hamas conflict are protected and have their basic needs met. Separately, concerns about wider regional conflict have led a U.S. senator to issue a strong warning against Iran and the Lebanon-based militia Hezbollah. For VOA's Veronica Baldras Iglesias explains.
The Israel Defense Forces have underscored their determination to destroy Hamas in its entirety following the militant group's deadly incursion into Israel on October 7. They also renewed calls for Palestinian civilians to evacuate the northern part of Gaza before strikes by Israel intensify. The IDF's spokesperson, Lieutenant Colonel Peter Lerner, was interviewed on ABC.
We are seeing that people are actually evacuating. Indeed, we would like to see the humanitarian organizations assisting in the evacuation of people for the welfare of people and not side with Hamas, telling them not to evacuate.
With more than 1 million Palestinian civilians potentially trying to move out of harm's way, the United States is working with its partners to ensure the humanitarian needs of the displaced are being met, said White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan on ABC's This Week.
We are in touch with our Israeli counterparts. We're in touch with the United Nations to help secure the necessary supplies of food, water, and medicine to the citizens of Gaza, those Palestinians who have nothing to do with the barbaric terrorists who carried out this attack.
The exchange of fire continued over the weekend at the Israeli border with Lebanon, where the Iran-backed militia Hezbollah operates. Republican Lindsey Graham, who plans to visit the region in the coming days with a bipartisan group of U.S. senators, issued a strong warning against Tehran and its allies, intending to play a more active role in the conflict.
If Hezbollah, which is a proxy of Iran, launches a massive attack on Israel, I will consider that a threat to the state of Israel, existential in nature. I will introduce a resolution in the United States Senate to allow military action by the United States in conjunction with Israel to knock Iran out of the oil business. Iran, if you escalate this war, We're coming for you.
Meanwhile, as part of a regional tour aimed at diffusing tensions, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken met Sunday with Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi. They both agreed on the importance of ensuring assistance to the Palestinian civilians fleeing the war, according to spokesperson Matthew Miller. Blinken is expected to travel again to Israel on Monday for further consultations. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
That's all we prepared for you this Monday, October 16, 2023. We now leave you with Victoria Ole and the song Salam Ya Sudan. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Vasco, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
October 16th is World Food Day, an observance meant to raise awareness of global hunger and malnutrition and to bring forth new ideas for boosting food security. It's a tall order. According to the UN's World Food Program, the world is experiencing the largest food crisis in modern history. Something about this global food crisis is different, said Dr. Kerry Fowler, the State Department's Special Envoy for Global Food Security. The number of food insecure people are greater. The crises seem to be more frequent, so we need some game-changing developments in agriculture and food security.
Food security fundamentally depends on fertile soils and adapted crops. Degraded soils and unadapted crops are never going to provide for food security.
That is why the United States, in partnership with the African Union and the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization, announced the Vision for Adapted Crops and Soils, or VACS. VACS aims to foster more resilient food systems by developing climate-resilient, nutritious crop varieties and building healthy, fertile soils, said Dr. Fowler. Initially, we're focusing back on Africa.
On soils, we seek to help African governments and farmers answer four fundamental questions, all of which require data and analysis that my government and our farmers here have, and which are mostly lacking in Africa.
The first question is where to plant. The answer to that question will help governments to promote effective land use planning, said Dr. Fowler. Second question, what to plant, will help farmers and governments make good decisions to maximize productivity, resilience, and nutrition.
Third question, what management system to employ? That's where we have to integrate everything we know about the environment, the soils, the crop varieties, to help farmers make informed decisions. And the fourth question, how do we apply all that in a given year, in a given season? That's where we hope to expand the access to hyperlocal, timely recommendations to help farmers make the kind of management decisions in real time that they need to better manage their inputs, such as fertilizer.
Africa is a continent where precision agriculture is more needed than anywhere else in the world. The farmers need that kind of detailed scientific knowledge about their soils that good management, sustainable practices, and productive agriculture require, said Dr. Fowler. We need to think boldly. We need to act boldly. We need some game-changing developments in agriculture and food security. VACS may be that development.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.